Welcome to the AI Ireland podcast, the show where we explore the fascinating world of artificial intelligence and its impact on our lives. I'm your host, Mark Kelly, and I'm thrilled to have you joining us today. Each week, we delve into the cutting-edge developments, breakthrough technologies, and innovative applications of AI right here in Ireland and beyond. As Ireland emerges as a global hub for AI research and development, we are here to bring you insightful conversations with leading experts, entrepreneurs and thought leaders who are at the forefront of this exciting revolution. So get ready to expand your knowledge and be inspired by the incredible possibilities that lie ahead. But before we dive in, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoy what you hear, we'd love it if you could leave us a review and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. Together, let's spread the AI revolution. Hello, it's Mark Kelly here, AI Ireland. I hope you're doing really well. Today, I'm joined by Neil Brady and Paul Watson from Calibre AI. Neil is the CEO and co-founder of Calibre AI, and Paul Watson is the CTO. Gemma, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Neil, can I start off with yourself? Calibre AI, what does the company do? How did this come about? And a brief background about your journey and your experience would probably be really helpful for the audience listening in.
Sure, yeah. So in a nutshell, what we do at Calibre is we build AI guardrails, text classifiers to help mitigate output of risky speech in general. The principal sort of class of speech that we target is defamation, but we also target harmful speech in the general sense. So racist, anti-Semitic, that kind of stuff. And we're also sort of exploring additional classes of speech that are risky and that people need guardrails and filters for, such as greenwashing. So we essentially, we build these, filters, off, large language models, which we fine tune with, our own invented data. And then we build tools and integrations off that, for principally journalists, but also publishers of all kinds, social media platforms, public relations firms, law firms, anybody who is at legal risk in the public conversation, which obviously in the modern age sort of pretty much means anybody. So that's what we do. We build sort of safety and risk mitigation tech. My background is largely as a journalist. I've sort of writing on sort of media tech and society. I previously worked at The Guardian for a while. And then I also worked at social media agency Storyful, which is where Paul and I met back in the day, where Paul was CTO. That's kind of us in a nutshell.
And Paul, could you talk to me a little bit from the technical perspective and some of the role that what you're currently doing at Calibre AI?
Sure. I mean, as sort of CTO of a small startup, it's a small team and that, so we tend to wear a lot of hats and do pretty much the full stack as programmers. So everything from building out the web application user interfaces right down to the actual models, which are mainly based on existing pre-existing large language models like Longforma or BERT from Google. And what we do really is refine them, train them, retrain them, work on the post-processing and the pre-processing steps around those models, basically so that we can sort of have an API. That's the sort of main way to do these things, is to have an API that a user or a customer can send some text into, and then they get back a confidence score or classification score, which gives them an indication of the probability that their label or their, whether it's defamatory, harmful, greenwashing, something like that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's in the startup world, we build programs at all levels. And we all try to use our different strengths to build a product that works safely and efficiently for customers.
Neil, I would have thought with generative AI, your business has become steady to now being very, very popular and in demand with particularly the different types of conversations that are happening and how they're being amplified.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of largely built this technology with sort of human generated text in mind, that being the problem, but whether human generated or machine generated, it works just as well either way. And obviously in the wake of ChatGPT, and generative AI more generally, the issue of risky, problematic, speech it's gone from kind of a trickle to an avalanche and a torrent. The reality is that the legal landscape for generative outputs, whether that is text that is coming directly from a generative bot like GPT-4 or ChatGPT or whatever, or a downstream application built off of that, is incredibly risky and is going to be legally liable for defamation and harm speech and that kind of thing. There's a lot to sort of figure out here, and the technology is not going anywhere. I think generative AI is here to stay. But the sort of the byword of the moment is guardrails. And that's essentially what we're in, is the guard rating business.
So if you can imagine, and I'm just going for an obvious example. So if I'm going to, do a post, or I'm going to write a blog, and some of the words that I'm using, you could probably see, well, actually, that's a little bit discriminatory. That is, you need to watch your tone here, or you kind of help coaching me by analyzing some of the text that I'm potentially going to share, and kind of just watch out for blind spots where people just intentionally haven't thought about how it could be perceived for some reason. So it's kind of like a Grammarly that would be there, kind of going like, you may want to think about how you're phrasing this. This comes across as very male dominated language, or a little bit. Am I on the right kind of track with that, or am I oversimplifying this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Paul might want to say something on this in a sec, but like, yeah, basically it that's what it does. It sort of is like an AI editorial assistant or sort of best practice editor on your shoulder that nudges you a little bit to say, look, you might want to rethink about that word you're using, because it contravenes the latest hate speech legislation, or in the case of defamation, it's illegal. And we are seeing this happen at the moment with OpenAI. So OpenAI are being sued. There are multiple suits going on for all sorts. There's copyright and other related things, but on the defamation end, they're being sued for defamation. A guy in the States, I can't remember his name, but he believes he's been defamed by an AI, by ChatGPT, and he's taken the case. Now, this particular case probably isn't going to make it. But every lawyer pretty much is sort of saying, that the idea of chatbots being not being liable for defamatory output, it doesn't stack up. They're not going to get the same kind of protections that social media companies have had over the last 20 years or so. So all about the guardrails, all about the risk mitigation.
And Paul, have you anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, Grammarly is a good example, though obviously they're far more on the grammar side of things, things you've seen for many years from Microsoft Word and things like that, and then they extended a bit into tone, and there was another one called Text.io, which also worked on sort of when you were putting together job ads to make sure that you weren't writing a job ad in a way that excluded women, people of color, other minorities. That was also something. So there were those kind of things, and they were, fairly well understood sort of grammar and just text-based classification problems. While we've come at it from, we targeted like defamation. It's a very complex pattern to detect. It does really require a machine learning perspective to do it well. While most of these other ones, sort of Grammarly, they would have started before much of the machine learning came about. So we do focus on the tricky, complex, nuanced patterns of speech and linguistics, and that's really where our specialty comes in. So we would like augment, I would say, those other ones.
And Paul, if we go into a little bit deeper under weeds in terms of the algorithm and how you're actually utilizing that in terms of I think you mentioned BERT and some of the LLMs. What? How do you drive that? What's the kind of the foundations there?
Yeah. So with all machine learning and with LLMs and ChatGPT, and that data is the by far the biggest differentiator when it comes to these things. So there will be some code in there. There will be some human programmed code that is unique to the company, that's proprietary. But the majority of the differentiation comes from the data that is used to train that code. Where we differ greatly is that we take one of these base models like BERT, or Longformer is the one we use the most, just sort of an extension of BERT. We will then use high quality data. So we've looked at every single sentence of training data that we've gone and fine tuned Longformer with. We don't just scrape a website from one of our customers and say, now we're going to apply it to Longformer and hope that it will detect a certain pattern. We really focus on the quality data annotation side of things. So, you know, we built up a data set of tens of thousands of human annotated sentences in the different classes that we detect for defamation, harm, and obviously the corollary neutral. The neutral side is also very important. You really need to balance things when you're doing machine learning. Otherwise you get the biases, you get the unintended consequences of just dumping the internet into your model and hoping that it will understand, which it doesn't, what is going on and what you're asking of it. So yeah, that's really in the weeds of it is the data side and the high quality side.
Yeah. Cause people can sometimes forget that, you know, people think it's intelligence, but it doesn't necessarily understand. It's just working to a specific rules and it's based on the data. Yeah. So if the data is dirty going in, it's going to spit back out based on the dirty data versus that it's being fine tuned and actually managed to, and people can understand why is this saying these comments? It's well, that's the data set that it's working in. So you've chosen to actually go through it. Obviously I'm guessing a very time tuning approach, but then you feel a lot more comfortable knowing that the data that's there is fit for purpose.
Absolutely. And what I'd say is that while nobody really, really understands these deep neural networks, nobody, you know, OpenAI have done some work recently where they've tried to sort of peel back the layers and start to be able to show a chain of reasoning through the deep neural networks and go, you know, why did it come up with this sentence at the end when it was prompted with X at the start? And so first of all, nobody, not the best scientists in the world, not the deep mind people from Google, they don't really understand what's going on with these deep neural networks, but at the end of the day, it is still a statistical problem. It is machine learning. There is more to it than pure statistics, but it is largely a statistical problem. So when you have something like Reddit feeding your large language model and, you know, around a topic such as Donald Trump or whatever, you know, the what those people said on Reddit that has now been scraped and input into your large language model is going to be statistically more likely to come out the other end than some journalist or a political expert who maybe had a more nuanced or more better understanding. They only wrote it once. That's only been ingested into the large language model once, while they've got maybe 100 rants from other people that's been ingested. So statistically, it looks at the token, looks at the word and says, what's the most likely word to come after that word at a very high level. And then goes, well, this is the word because many more people said it that way from the data set that's there. So yeah, it's a really tough problem. Data in, data out.
So this is a really good foundation to have, and I suppose it gives everyone confidence of using your systems. So we're very, very close to getting the AI Act ratified. I'm sure it's going to come true. Now, interestingly enough, we've had a lot of, you know, big companies now take a step back and actually say, you know, we've got some problems here with this. So, but let's say by the end of the year, the AI Act gets put into law. Companies will have to abide by this if they're selling AI within Europe or utilizing it within the company, within the product. And this talks about risk in three different levels: low, medium, and high risk, and managing through that. So you could have a situation where, you know, Bard currently isn't utilized in Europe. If you want to get access to it, you're going to need to use a VPN. You know, OpenAI is going to have to utilize certain parameters if they're going to stay to be used to their data. Where do you see the AI Act impacting organizations who are utilizing AI or want to buy or sell it? Because, you know, at the top of every CEO's lips at the moment is, how do I get generative AI into my product suite, either internally or externally? But we also need to be mindful of the regulation to adhere to.
Well, I think, I mean, as you said, like, there's stuff to be played out with the AI Act. I think some of what's in the AI Act is already covered by the existing legislation. I worked for 3 years in a place called the IIA, the Institute of International European Affairs, and I have a very strong background in regulation and policy enforcement. Oftentimes, you know, it's more, we have plenty of legislation. It's about enforcing the existing legislation. So I think a lot of the AI Act ground is covered already in things like GDPR, Digital Services Act, that kind of thing. But broadly speaking, I mean, one of the latest legal assessments is that none of the large language models right now are compliant with the AI Act and are going to be compliant. I think the current requirement is a declaration of what copyrighted works have or have not been included. But even there, I mean, the other day, you may have seen Sarah Silverman, the American comedian, announced that she's suing OpenAI for including a load of hers and others' data and works. So, and it does depend upon the risk, the risk category that you're included in. But basically, you want to try and do a couple of things. You want to make sure that you're not using any tools that are violating any copyright. You're not using tools that are sort of scraped data en masse, that try to comply with explainability regulations. Under GDPR, there's requirements for algorithmic explainability. And there's the requirements are stronger in relation to other areas that sort of are outside of our sphere, like credit rating assessments and that kind of thing. But in our case, we have basically, and we have an advisory panel, and which you may have seen on our site, which is composed of people like law professors and former newspaper editors and computer scientists who have sort of worked closely together with us, which is also quite an unusual thing. We in a lot of the big tech companies, those kind of pieces are siloed, and we've made sure that we wanted everybody talking to each other in this way. But we basically tried to build the tech as best we can. There's more work to be done, there always is, but to be as kind of respectful of copyright, privacy, GDPR, explainability. So in short, that's the kind of tech that you want to be deploying in your organization at the moment to minimize your risk.
Yeah, so organizations just need to be very cognizant before they actually embark on this journey that they're taking in diversity of thought from a variety of different inputs, because once you lose that, your public trust, it's going to be very, very challenging to get it back. And I think we've seen kind of numerous examples of that. Pretty final question to yourself, Paul, where do you see this going in terms of how we're going to start to interact with data, how we're going to interact with using certain data, using your models from like OpenAI or generative AI? How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, I think the conversation is being dominated by ChatGPT, Google's Bard, which are what you would call sort of general access or general purpose large language models. You can ask them anything, you know, and you can go and you can, and people have, they've asked ChatGPT all sorts of things, everything from legal questions to recipes to child rearing, fraud, programming, anything. They've asked it everything and anything. And I think that's where the main problem is, and it's obscuring a far more useful use case for these large language models, which is single task large language model usage, or a more scoped sort of use case for these models. So, you know, defamation would be one of the ones that classifying defamation. So we could use OpenAI. We could say, we fine tune it with our data set and go, now go and detect any defamatory content that's coming out of a thing, or harmful, or a whole range of different use cases. But each one of those use cases has many, many sort of, it needs a process of data discovery, problem discovery. A lot of the kind of product work that a lot of people normally do, they're now abandoning and saying, just throw it at ChatGPT. And I think that's where the problem is really coming in, is the use case. And so we need to look at this and go, what is it good for? And not treat it like a general purpose AI, because it really, really isn't. As you said, it doesn't understand. There's no intelligence there. All the problems that you see are coming from sort of the 20% of usage that millions of people are throwing at it. Meanwhile, the internal testing didn't throw up those problems because they've got limited amounts of testing. So yeah, I think the single use case or limited use case, each model will then be adapted, fine-tuned, prompt engineering will be applied to them. and you have a business problem, and then you'll go, how can a large language model help with this? Can it help with this? Maybe it's not the best use. It's also expensive. Running these large language models are far more expensive than a lot of other normal traditional programming techniques, data modeling techniques, statistical techniques. They're still very appropriate and still very useful. Fraud detection cannot afford to use OpenAI to do all the, say Visa. They just can't afford to use these large language models to do that work that they're already doing. So yeah, that's where I see it going.
Leo Brady, Paul Watson, Caliber AI, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Membership of AI Ireland places your organization at the center of the fastest growing technology sector in the world today. As a member, you'll have access to a diverse and highly engaged professional community, which is committed to driving artificial intelligence forward in Ireland. Membership of AI Ireland is for any organization, including data and analytics. We offer memberships to corporate, government, and SME organizations. Interested to find out more? Contact mark@aiawards.ie.